Welcome to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. So glad you could join us today. It's just terrific to be back in the studios live here at WCOM Studios in Carrboro, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. As you know, we've been away, we've been on the road. Our last production, live production, was in the gracious studios of WOMR out in Provincetown, Massachusetts. That's on the tip of Cape Cod. I hope you enjoyed that program I brought you, which included a discussion about fishermen and all the regulations they have to learn how to navigate while at the same time doing their hazardous jobs. One thing I want to say up front, my Boston accent is back in full force. Habits sneak up on you. You don't see them until you look backwards. So in my reviews of these programs, I have heard that invisible R, or actually, I heard that it was missing. If you deal with me for the next few programs, I'll try to recover my lost R. In the meantime, I'd like to give you a heads up on what's going on for our next creative cycle. Here's some coming attractions. In the pipeline, very, very early stages, we will be running programs about crane safety. You know, those cranes and those towers that get built. How do you become a crane operator, and how do you maintain your credentials? It's something I've always wondered and figured that's a tremendous job with great responsibilities. I think it's something you all might be interested in learning more about. Another show in the pipeline concerns stand-up comedy. How do you learn to become a stand-up comic? Well, it just so happens in beautiful Carrboro, we have a school that helps people learn how to do that. What I'm also interested in that show is figuring out why somebody would want to do that. Stay tuned. Those shows will probably produce somewhere in early November. Now, in terms of final stages of productions, we are going to have a program with Linda Groover, Dr. Linda Groover for Pharmacy for the People. Then in another program, we have The Wealth of Health. This is Sherry Gibbs, who is the manager over at Massage Envy in a region here called South Point in Durham, North Carolina. And the scope of that program is to describe the many benefits of massage, and she will be serving as our ambassador to massage, and we'll have some guests with guts who have described their stories. I'm interested in that program, and I think you will be too, because if for any of you who have not benefited from a massage, this might turn you on into a new way of understanding health and the value of touch. Now, in October, we also have another program. It's showcasing an incredible new book called, by Jack Heath, called Rebecca's Rising. It's part of a trilogy, and I had the fortune of reading it this summer, the first book, which is Rebecca's Rising. It blew me away. It was fast, it's safe, in the sense that it's an incredible mystery story, but the thing that I found most haunting about it was how the author, Jack Heath, and John Thompson also contributed, how these two gentlemen wove a story that works with doubt, and it describes the witch trials of 300 years ago and how perhaps there's a new twist to that discoveries. I'd like you to join me in that show in October, and I'll have more information on my Facebook page about that. It is a lot to look forward to. Finally, we have another little tidbit for you. Here's a sample of one of our guests who will be joining me again in October. Her name is Linda Watson, and her book, cookbook, is all about called Wild About Organic. I'd like you to listen into this tape, and then from there, I'll close it out, and we're going to return to a program about the Chamber of Commerce. I'll be with you in a minute. Thank you. I'm thrilled you could join us, Linda.
Leanne, such a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you. Now, Linda, can you just help me? Let's just begin with your journey. Where did you start in this journey to making your book, the Wildly Organic Affordable Cookbook, and help us travel along with you?
Well, thank you so much. I was a political activist and an environmentalist who had retired after having made a fortune in a dot-com. So I was traveling the world with my husband, the photographer, and just sort of feeling pretty good about things. Mm. But then I kept reading the paper, and I noticed two themes that really started to bother me. One was people were taking the food stamp challenge about 5 years ago. Mm. And this was a brilliant idea created by anti-hunger activists who said, you know, We haven't raised the food stamp allowance in 9 years, but inflation has gone up. It never was generous. Now it's really problematic. Let's show people how hard it is by having famous people and important people take the challenge. So journalists, church groups, people in office took the challenge and tried to live on a dollar a meal per person for a week. And they had a horrible time, a horrible time. They were eating ramen and, you know, complaining about not having coffee. And this bothered me because I'd worked my way through school and I knew that you could eat on an affordable budget, but you had to be organized in certain ways. I thought, this, it's true, we need to raise the food stamp allowance, but, you know, these people need to learn how to cook. At the same time, Michael Pollan was saying, stay away from the center of the store. Whatever you do, don't go on the inside of the store. Stay on the outside where the food rots. And it's your honor and privilege to pay farmers a lot of money for food. And I thought, these two sides need to get together. We need to show people how to cook the excellent food that's in the middle of the store. So I started doing a little, just what was going to be a three-week challenge. Mm-hmm. And I described this in my book, Wildly Affordable Organic. I thought, well, we'll try it 3 weeks. We'll do a dollar a meal at the cheap store. We'll do a dollar a meal at Whole Foods and see how that goes. And then a dollar a meal at the farmer's market because so many people say they can't afford produce on this budget. Well, Leanne, 3 weeks, you know, just a week into it, we realized we wanted to live like this. Mm. And at the end of 3 weeks, everything had changed. It became a 3.5 month project. And then I said, I have to launch a website. I see how if you will focus on thrift, you have a huge number of benefits, including losing weight, being good for the environment, raising healthier children, being good for your local economy, and by the way, eating delicious food.
Well, we talk about, you've mentioned that you thrift was the impulse for you to move forward with this journey, but you went from thrift and its benefits. You've always used organic, I understand.
Yes.
But then you realized that by basing this on thrift, you were able to really simplify the process and the purported expense of eating organically. So you're kind of threw that to the breeze, didn't you?
Absolutely. You know, I really was surprised at this because, you know, my initial goal, remember, was a dollar a meal per person. It turns out that the food stamp allowance was actually $1.56 a meal at the time in my state here of North Carolina. But the way to get there was to cook food from scratch. That's it. Cook seasonal food from scratch, low on the food chain. And if you'll do those things, you save so much money that you can go organic on less than the current food stamp allowance here in North Carolina, less than $5 a day. So you just, what you do is you eat with the seasons, and then you find out because you're cooking from scratch, you're not putting trans fat in your food. You're not putting in high fructose corn syrup. You're not, you know, frying it one time and shipping it and then frying it again. You're eating really good, wholesome food. It tastes fresher. And cheap food is food that's in season and hasn't, you didn't have to pay to transport it or to store it for a long period of time. So focus on thrift, cook yourself, and you can really afford to eat wonderful food.
Well, I would like to pick up on that cook yourself thing because it seems to have fallen out of the vocabulary as cooking school or learning how to cook as children. It just doesn't fit into our lifestyle. That kitchen table, that kitchen occasionally gets visited, but it's not always the way for many American families. So how do you fit in the cooking lessons?
I think you're raising a couple of really interesting points. For one thing, people have forgotten how to cook. There's really now two or three generations where families have not passed down to their children the details of how to cook from scratch. People don't know how to make bread I have a lot of people who don't know how to freeze beans. I mean, some of the questions I get in my classes are really quite frightening when you see that. So there's a gap in skills, but really it's so easy. And we have so many different ways of learning now with the Food Network and the internet. You can come to my website, cookforgood.com. I've got a lot of videos there that show you how to sort beans and make yogurt and that sort of thing. But you also, there's the family aspect that's so important. Think about it, Leanne. If you're with your teenage daughter, assuming you have one.
Yes, I do.
Good. Okay. And she wants to talk to you about something that's exciting her or troubling her, maybe, you know, that cute new boy at school she doesn't quite know how to talk to. Is she more likely to ask you about that while you're standing in line at McBurger or while you're standing in the kitchen, side by side, not looking at each other, but maybe she's chopping up beans and you're peeling potatoes.
You're completely right.
So I think it brings families together, and it gives you a chance to help her learn skills that help her feel adult and important, helps her share the family workload, and lets her then have a wonderful skill that she can take to her family.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I do think that that knowledge gap over generations now is needs to be replaced with some handy knowledge. And let's talk about that. You mentioned you have your website where people can go to learn how to cook, but you have other products too.
Yes, I'm very excited about a series of videos that we just filmed this spring at Meredith College, which has a nationally known nutrition school. They're located here in Raleigh. I'm the first person who is not on the faculty that they allowed to use their food lab. And we filmed the four classes that go with the Wildly Good Cook series. If you take all four classes, you get a certificate suitable for framing that you can hang in your kitchen. And it says, Leanne has completed requirements to become a certified Wildly Good Cook and shall hereafter be known as such. And it's signed by me and signed by the host of the classes. So it's a great thing. But these four classes take you through my book, Wildly Affordable Organic. We're going to sell those as videos so that people can see them all over the country or all over the world. They don't have to come see me in person. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the stage three of a Blue Cross Blue Shield grant proposal process, sort of like American Idol, it really is, to develop a teacher's training program so that others can learn how to use my videos and then do cooking demonstrations to teach my courses, bring those courses to food banks and slow foods groups and healthcare centers, wherever, all across the country, creates jobs, spreads health, spreads good food.
You're in the stage three. Does that mean that it's concluding or does that mean it's commencing?
There's one more. So what I've won being in stage three is I get coaching from Bull City Forward, which is a venture capital firm in Durham, which is very near where we are, coaching to help develop the business plan and so forth. And then there's one more presentation by all the finalists, and then they decide who gets the grants. But I already feel like a winner. Just putting this in place, establishing my partners, I'm working with Whole Foods, the Center for Environmental Farming Systems, Carolina Farm Stewardship Association, the North Carolina Department of Agriculture, all sorts of great groups are supporting this. And of course, Meredith College and the UNC School of Nursing. So this is going to be well supported, a great program. Whether or not I get the grant, we're going to go ahead and do it. And I have a book coming out next year on fighting obesity by cooking the wildly affordable organic way. And I believe that each one of us has a chance to vote with our forks three times a day. You can choose where you buy your food. You can choose what sort of food you put into your body. You can choose whether you're supporting corporations or individuals and small businesses with your money. Your body recreates itself in a really quite rapidly, and you become the food that you eat. So you have a great deal of control about how you feel, your health, and the health of your community and your planet. I believe that if I can get some people to cook a pot of beans every week, that's my simple goal, more people cooking a pot of beans every week, that we can slow global warming, we can help give the scientists and corporations a chance to get their acts together and make it so those polar bears don't have to swim so far to the next ice floe. We can make a difference, and I ask all your listeners to join me. Well, thank you. Thank you for the Courage cocktail.
How I hoped you enjoyed that little teaser. It's very important that we give our listeners a chance to prepare for some upcoming shows. Again, Linda will be joining me on October 17th. Her website, for those interested in learning more before that show actually broadcasts, actually she will be here live in the studio. Her website, Linda Watson, is www.cookingforgood.com. Also, I want to throw out another reminder for you. The programs in October about the Salem witch history and how on earth we could kind of approach that with a new twist. You can learn more about Jack Heath's new book at his website, which is SalemWitchTrilogy.com. I hope you look forward to those shows as much as I'm looking forward to them in the pipeline. So we want to return to a program which we broadcast in early May. I'm joined by Aaron Nelson in this show. Aaron serves as the director of the Chamber of Commerce here in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. On my Facebook page, I made a suggestion. Let me know what you wanted to repeat. And this was by far the most popular program in recent history. I'd like you to listen in and join me in welcoming Aaron Nelson. Thank you. Welcome to Courage Cocktail, Aaron.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Thanks for joining us in the kitchen. What I'd like to know is this. Tell our listeners a little bit about the history of the Chamber of Commerce.
Sure. Chambers have been around for 200 years. The oldest one is in Charleston. Our chamber was born in 1942 as a merchants association. And then the Chamber of Commerce and the Merchants Association merge in the 70s, and we've now been around for 70 years.
70 years.
Yeah, and we have functioned as the Chapel Hill Carrboro Chamber of Commerce for over 40 years. And we have 1,100 businesses and nonprofits amongst our membership.
Of which WCOM is a proud member.
We're happy to have WCOM. We have about 110 nonprofits that choose to pay dues to our organization. It's one of the biggest segments of our membership.
Okay.
And you're right, chambers have an old brand. And so let me clear a few things up. One, we have nothing to do with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They have the same last name, but we're not family.
Okay.
And so just like there's people who share your last name or share mine that we're not related to, we don't pay any dues to them. We don't particularly appreciate their politics, their policies.
Okay.
And so we've resigned our membership from them. And so we function completely independently. I'm governed by a local board of directors. I'm a local nonprofit, and we report exclusively to them.
Now, you've described some of the wonderful questions about our answers of membership and history and legacy. How has it changed over time? Let's say not 70 years, but over the past 10 years.
Sure.
What have you noticed?
Well, there was a time in which chambers of commerce where people joined because it was civic responsibility. It was the right thing to do. You did it because your father had been a member or your mother had. Mm-hmm. That time has passed. If we can't deliver value in return for people's investment, we don't deserve the investment. And so people now spend membership dues with us and expect something from it. And we, particularly over the last several years of recession, have dramatically shifted what it is we do for a living. And we believe we deliver exceptional value and earn great support. In fact, we grew by 40% last year. 400 small businesses joined the chamber last year.
Well, let's draw the attention to taking the temperature and the pulse of the Chapel Hill, Carrboro, North Carolina region, just to build some context for this narrative. What businesses are doing great in this market?
Well, rallying lately has been restaurant. So our community was late into the recession, and we were first out. We're recession resistant. We used to think recession proof, but that wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
The university and the hospital combined for about $2 billion in payroll on an annual basis, mm-hmm. whether the economy is good or bad. And so that has been a buoying force in our economy. But even in this bad economy, the university had to make cuts. So growing in our market are restaurants are reporting that their first quarter was 20% over last year's first quarter, and last year's first quarter another 20% over the previous. So they're seeing regular gains. The healthcare industry continues to grow. UNC Healthcare added 350 employees last year, and many different healthcare providers, whether that is the urgent care facility, UNC Healthcare, or others related to that, continue to grow as well. Our nonprofits have suffered but have stabilized and are starting to grow back and add more employees back into their mix. And the service providers, again, are being called upon, the printers and the web designers, graphic designers.
Mm-hmm.
Their business is picking up as well.
Oh, and you're saying this. Listeners, you can't hear this, but he's smiling.
You know, things are getting better. We're a very unique place. We have more restaurants per capita than anywhere else in the United States. We have 5 farmers market. We have 8 grocery store brands. So foodie is big. And so the foodie economy, when people have disposable income, they've been spending it there. We also have the highest per capita income of anywhere in the state of North Carolina. And
mm-hmm.
so when you have high per capita income, well-educated people, then that means your service economy usually does well as well.
Well, those are very important factoids about our region and how people behave in the context of the economy, which was taking a little bit of a toll over the past few years. But can we address what small companies are doing? Now, I know that you have the restaurant segment, but are there other small businesses that support and rely on their chamber, your Chamber of Commerce?
Sure. We have segments of our membership, and one of them we call PODS. It stands for Professionals and Office Dwellers. So you can imagine them. They have a receptionist in the front. There's a copy machine in the back. Everybody's got an officer, and they have cubbies. I have a fax machine, you know, there's a phone system. So they're generally 3 to 10 employees, and they're doing a thing. They're charging by the hour for a service. They have letters after their name. So they're CPAs or doctors or psychologists or therapists or massage therapists. They're bigger. They're web designers, graphic designers. So those office dwellers in our market, they call on us for, there's sort of four things we do. Job number one is to help our members make and save money. So make money, we connect them to clients and customers. Save money, we negotiate discounts on products and services. So people get their health care through a chamber benefit. We can talk more about that in a minute. They get their workers' comp insurance through us. They'll get their liability insurance. Or we'll help them connect. So WCOM is looking for underwriters or investors. You might come to us. People use us for the front of house, as well as the back of house of their organization. The second thing we want to do is give them good information and access to decision makers. So what's up with that road? What's up with that empty space? What's the policy? When does 300 East Main going to complete? Right. All this sort of data and information to help you make good choices. Third thing, we want to help them grow their network. And then lastly, create a sustainable community where they can thrive. And sustainability, I think, is what makes us unique also. Our chamber is fully committed. We must protect our environment, advance social justice and social equity, and have a robust economy. Those three things are essential to our success. And some chambers focus exclusively on the economic issues, and that's job one for us. But we also know that social equity and environmental stewardship are critical to making this the great place that we know it is.
Well, now you're describing the triple
bottom line.
Bottom line. And listeners, let's go into this for a moment, because that is a kind of a new tool in our toolbox. Mm-hmm. And a triple bottom line, as I have come to understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, is people, planet, and profits.
Right. Or we use the term performance. Okay. So a nonprofit won't have profit, but they have good performance. So people, planet, and performance. Or sometimes it's called the three E's, environment, equity, and economy. Mm-hmm. The language that we choose is environmental stewardship, social responsibility, economic prosperity. And organizations and governments and people in their own human activities, if they focus on those three things, we think that's what makes communities successful, makes businesses successful, helps regions thrive. And so we spend a lot of time teaching small business how to thrive, particularly in this local economy. The customer cares, the employee cares, people's 13-year-old is coming home from middle school and telling them they care. You know, this is a mega trend, and we have to help the business community be prepared for it.
Now, that mega trend describes to me this notion that the conversation is no longer being controlled by the companies, but controlled by the consumers.
Well, consumers often control the companies in terms of product provision, in terms of there's a lot, you know, if they're selling a product or service, they should be pretty customer focused. So customer interest drives lots of things. Sometimes companies are too large to be influenced by local interest, but our local employers care deeply. They know what it takes to recruit and retain Gen X and Gen Y employees. They're trying to be more efficient, reduce their cost of energy. They're trying to comport with the community's values.
When you describe those it's a fundamental shift in a paradigm from service to, okay, how do we get this in 3D? How do we become an invaluable, sustainable living organism, so to speak, in an environment as any business or and you serve these businesses? When you think about this stuff, what is the number one adaptation that you've seen happen in this new economy?
In the sustainability space in the new economy, the adaptation is measuring. Mm-hmm. You can't manage what you don't measure, right? And so folks now are paying attention to their power bill when they weren't. They're taking a look at efficiency, vehicle miles traveled. They're making shifts. Rather than pay an employee 52 cents a mile as reimbursement, how about I give you $5 every time you carpool? You know, let's shift what the behavior that we are rewarding. Let's market that. So let's use Chapel Hill Tire Car Care Center, for example, based here in downtown Carrboro. They're solar powered. They have two flush toilets. They have an oil change that's 100% post-consumer, no new crude in their oil change. They do nitrofill. And because they have made a huge shift to be a green and sustainable oil change and mechanic, that's engendered customer loyalty, employee loyalty. They've added five new positions at the Carrboro store, and they've expanded into Durham.
So, all right, we're describing this passion for building a community that wants to preserve their community and support people who are as interested or as invested in long-term sustainability. Is that what's going on?
That is what's going on. And this community has made its own shift. Our community has historically cared about the environment and it cared about social justice and forgot a little bit about the economy because we believed we had overconfidence in our brand. We thought everybody wanted to locate in Chapel Hill. Everybody wanted to come to Carrboro. Downtown Durham was a dump. Downtown Raleigh was a dump. The reality is they've been through renaissance. Mm. And so if we're going to recruit and retain talent and bring the employers, we got to work at it now. The other thing we realize is that even if you're a socialist, you got to tax something in order to provide the services. So even the Uber left know that they have to have a robust economy in order to generate the revenue to protect the parks and to do the recycling and to have public art and to have all that stuff. So even the left wing of the left wing of the Democratic Party in Chapel Hill and Carrboro has decided that economic development is in their interest. We just have to make sure it's culturally appropriate economic development. We don't want an asphalt plant, but we sure should try to figure out how to grow tech workers and how to grow taxable property and how to redevelop. Because when we sat back and only cared about two legs of the stool, you get in trouble. And now that we've realized that the economy is interesting again, we're now setting out affirmative strategies on economic development. The old model was defense. We tell you what we don't want. We don't want the polluter. We don't want the, and we go through this list of don't wants.
Sure.
When you say what you don't want, you get whatever, I don't know, you don't get what you want. When we convert from a defensive posture to an affirmative strategy, let's express what we desire. Let's talk about what we love, not what we hate.
Right.
Let's be pro-vegetable rather than anti-meat. You do that, you get what you want. And there's been a huge conversion amongst our elected officials and public policy and others to beginning to express what we desire.
Well, the question that I would come up with is, you certainly don't want to be the arbiter of tastes about, is this green enough? Or are you becoming a board or a group of people that have to decide what qualifies as green enough?
So we're not the arbiter of that. We do think the customer cares. And so in 2004, we created a foundation. In 2007, a group called the Institute for Sustainable Development. It's a partnership between Duke and UNC and Chambers of Commerce. And we created a certification for small business. Mm-hmm. It's called Green Plus. Okay. So you can go to gogreenplus.org. Well, that certification we beta tested here. And then we rolled it out across the country. It's now live in 17 cities. Use the Green Plus module to teach small businesses how to make and save money by going green and sustainable. And so that Green Plus methodology has been an exceptional tool, one born out of our community now having global impact.
Now that I understand this a little bit more closely, that you're really creating a product to support a long-range view, not just a short-range view, but you're talking about longitudinally looking forward into the future.
Our interest is that small business, small employers, mm-hmm. are successful. Because if they are, then we'll all be successful. If you're going to move people from homelessness to housing, they need wages. And the way to do wages is to employ them. So we need to have a robust economy. If we're going to move people from homelessness to housing or poverty to wealth, small businesses aren't getting rich. But they're taking the money they make and sending their kids to college. Or they're taking the money they make and hiring one more employee. Or redeveloping a old piece of property that needs improvement. Or making donations to charity. And so if we can get our economy rolling, we'll have positive community impact. Now, some people have an anti-business lean, right? We're classic liberals in this community. And because of that, our ACLU card and our Sierra Club card starts to itch in our pocket if we're too pro-business, right? That's been the tradition. But the reality is that the small business community's interests and the interests of a progressive community are not antithetical. They're, in fact, very much aligned.
So that the largest responsibility I see in your world is being able to manage the conversations peacefully and trying to convert those uber liberals,
right,
as you would call them, and get them listening to, you know, the health and welfare of small businesses.
Right. So if you're anti-Enron and you think that Enron screwed all of us or whatever your view of major megalopolises are, don't let that bleed into what you think about what we need to do in order to make the Art Center thrive or how to make Cat's Cradle go or what to do with Jersey Mike's, any number of restaurants or small businesses in our market. It's in our interest to help them thrive, because if they do, we all benefit.
Well, okay, let's move into another realm,
sure,
of the community here. One of the things that's going on in this region, and I know it's going along across the U.S., is these small business incubators, and specifically the urge to innovate, the urge to support entrepreneurial activities. The universities here have spent a great deal of time building up their entrepreneurial programs. We have Duke, we have NC State, we have, of course, UNC over it. I think their product is called BASE. So how do these little engines of entrepreneurial know-how interact with your work?
Sure. So our community has a ton of bright and interesting, talented entrepreneurial people. But left by yourself, not everyone knows how to make fire in the woods by themselves, right? And so what
That's
an
true.
Incubator, an accelerator does is teaches some of the skills. You know what it is you want, but teaches you some of those skills and connects you with others. When you see somebody else doing what they're doing, or you're connected with other experts, you all of a sudden your fire making becomes easier, right? You learn tools and techniques, you're connected. And so the purpose of these incubators and accelerators is to help, when you make human eye contact with somebody else, and you've got now an advisor, you've got a coach, you've got somebody who's helping you out. And so there's been a proliferation of these, also sort of pushed on by the recession. When you didn't have a formal employer anymore, this is now, you've begun fooling with that dream that you always had. And they're having great positive impact. In our role, we refer to them.
Mm-hmm.
The chamber houses a group called SCORE. They're the Senior Corps of Retired Executives. There's 20 former CEOs and CFOs who provide free counseling to small businesses and nonprofits thinking of starting up. It's sort of a network throughout the whole community, and we're proud to be part of that network.
Okay, so you're all working together, and I noticed that when I was reading your bio to our listeners, I also noticed you're a director or an advisory on the Small Business and Technology Development Centers.
Yeah, so if you're familiar with agricultural extension, which North Carolina State
sure.
does, they send people who go out to your farm and they tell you how to make it grow better. We have ag extension for small business. It's called the SBTDC, the Small Business Technology Development Center, and they're a branch of UNC. We have an office here in Chapel Hill, Carolina North. They report to the president of the UNC system, and their job is small business development. So they coach and teach and go through your financials and teach classes and programs. It's all free. Well, I should say it's prepaid in your taxes. So you paid your taxes, so it doesn't cost you anything.
Amazing. One of the unusual trends that I picked up on reading their 2012 report that I think they produced in April, that's the SBTDC report, was saying that they're concerned about the age of entrepreneurs, that there's a younger component that's seemingly absent.
Yeah,
what's
I don't.
Your observations?
That's not been my experience here
okay.
locally. Well, there's a mix. There's probably people who had resources. They made their money. They've got comfortable. Their house is paid off or close. And they have risk tolerance that they're now able to try that new thing rather than go find a new job at age 60 or age 55. Launch your new venture. On the younger side, there's still there's work opportunity. They have to figure out whether that's going to pay them enough or is interesting enough, or ought they to create their own thing. But usually they don't have much of a net to fall to in order to take the risk of entrepreneurship. And so we'll find that they often have a side hustle right? Sure. They work at a restaurant. They do have jobs, but they and they are probably SBTDC. They're maybe less likely to go to the physical place and engage the SBTDC. They're getting all their information from the internet, from friends, from peer groups, from Facebook.
Sure. And which reminds me, tell me a little bit about what your impression of social media. Has that enhanced your reach?
It has for us. We are technophiles at our office. So there's 7 full-time staff and everybody under the age of 37. Oh, so I'm the oldest in the office.
Not by much,
and
obviously.
I've got people in their 20s. And so we tweet 7 handles. We've got 4 or 5 or 6 Facebook pages with different information that we share. And we use that active. And it's been very successful for us to spread the word that way. All of that said, so while we'll be technophiles and we'll be heavy into that stuff, we know that what builds loyalty is human relationships. And so it is our humanity that will build the relationships that will be durable and that will help businesses grow and thrive when they make human connections with each other. So we'll engage you in both channels.
In both channels. Very, very helpful. Now, when we were talking a little while ago, we spoke about the talent in this region. And our local newspaper, regional, which is based in Raleigh, called the News and Observer, ran a very interesting story describing how important it is that people are spending time attracting talent. In the past, the model was recruit large companies to come into a region to set up shop and to help people find jobs, find work, all that kind of a plan. Well, now they've taken that one step farther and they're addressing the need to really reach directly to that talent. The concern, of course, is that is this region reached a critical mass so that should a technical person make a decision to come to the area, are there, and it doesn't work out, are there enough other opportunities to have him or her stay in the area?
So it's exactly right. We no longer go find the major employer, and then the major employer is going to source talent from all over the country. The employer comes to where the talent is now. So AICPA relocated from New York, hired 400 people, and they came here because we had the talent. And so the companies now want to go where the talent is. We have more PhDs per capita. We've got a well-educated community. The other thing about talent acquisition is that the recession has had major impact on this. People bought homes, and now you can't sell your home in California to move to the job you want in North Carolina, or you can't sell your house in Florida. What that's led to is we now have over 2,000 unfilled technology positions. They're open, and we can't source the talent. So we have a huge talent pool, and people are coming here for it, and then we have certain segments of talent where it's really hard to find them. So there's this whole triangle-wide campaign now. Called Smarty Pants.
It sure is.
So they're looking for Smarty Pants. And
I think we have to shout out to Leanne Nance. Is that the lady
yes.
who's in charge of Smarty Pants?
So Smarty Pants is a great way to connect with local talent. And then there's a whole drive on why this is the place to be. You could be in Pittsburgh or Philly or New York or Austin, but we're a great place to be, and we're going to try to recruit you.
So do you see your work now as synthesizing, moving from beyond that idea of sustainable businesses, to really a sustainable community that attracts the top finest minds in the nation?
So we think that's critical to one of our objectives, and that's branding our community as the place that you want to live and work and shop and play and learn and raise your family. This is the best place in the world to grow and start a business. And the more we brand and promote that, the more we make that a reality. People want to come to your market. You have to do several things concurrently rather than consecutively. We're going to recruit talent. We're going to recruit employers. We're going to work with existing employers and get them to stay. It's very important. 80% of job growth will come from existing employers. So we have to nurture and support them and make sure they don't walk off on us. And then sustainability for us is going to be a mindset, a value system that will carry through. People now understand it better than they did 8 years ago when we started working on teaching it. Now people understand it's just in their value system, and that'll continue to be in ours as well.
When you look forward to starting every day as the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, you must deal with a variety of different things.
We have a list of our favorite questions we've ever been asked, and we've got some crazy questions that we've been asked, but every day is new. every day somebody will call the chamber and they want information, or they want to sit and talk to us and coach them about how to grow and start their business, help them connect with resources. But people call us about unbelievable.
Well, that's a perfect segue to take a small break for our PSA while Aaron and I talk briefly about our next half. I want to thank you, Aaron, for joining us today.
Well, the honor is mine. Thank you so, so much.
And let's take a little bit of a break. Listening in to that program with our Director of Chamber of Commerce here in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, North Carolina. Yes, the flavor of that show was extremely local. But I want you to know that the essence of his message, particularly in the second half of the show, bears large application to other parts of the world. I hope you'll consider the WCOM on-air fund drive. Please come out to our website, www.wcomfm.org, and consider making a donation to our 100 by 100 campaign. The 100 by 100 campaign is we're trying to recover 100 followers who can contribute $100. Any amount does will help us. Specifically, we're planning to move to the Arts Center in August, and this move requires a little bit more resources than we have. Thank you so much. Oh, wait a minute. Welcome back to Courage Cocktail. I'm your host, Leanne McClymont, and this is WCOM FM 103.5. Joining me in the studio is Aaron Nelson, who is the director of the Chamber of Commerce for Carrboro, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. We're playing this program, rebroadcasting it from an earlier show in May. Tune in and listen in to Aaron's thoughts about growing business and growing talent. Welcome back. You're listening to WCOM LP FM 103.5, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, North Carolina. This is Courage Cocktail Radio, and I'm your host, Leanne McClymont. Our program today is centered upon the ever-evolving role of local Chamber of Commerce to support out small businesses and communities who rely on them. Now, we know that our listeners extend beyond this Tar Heel state, so the notions that we're talking about here with our guest, Aaron Nelson, really serves to develop a framework of what the Chamber of Commerce body politic is truly doing to support communities. Now, before we took our little break, you left us with a teaser, and that was some of the craziest questions that people have called up the Chamber of Commerce for. You've got to tell our audience. Please share some.
So we got a call about a dead body. I'll come back to that. So we got a telephone call about what is UNC. She sees it everywhere, this woman called. She sees it on T-shirts. It's on signs. We had to let her know it's the University of North Carolina. It's UNC. It's an acronym. We get telephone calls about what day the leaves will change. We get telephone calls about temperature. And of course, it's standard. But we did get a call about a dead body. We got a call from an elder care facility, and one of their residents had died. The family couldn't agree on who would pay for the funeral, and so nobody would come and get the body. And they wanted me to resolve that for them. Would you call your local Chamber of Commerce if this happened to you?
Well, no. Hold on. I've got a comment here. If I knew it was Aaron, I would be tempted to make that phone call.
We are a full-service Chamber of Commerce. You call about anything, and we can help work it out. Yesterday, somebody called me, and we did help them.
I bet you did.
We did.
I'm sure.
They didn't like our original solution, but we ended up calling the police chief and working out what we should do with this body.
Okay.
Yesterday, I got a telephone call of a guy from, he was in Cleveland, and he was wanted to talk about a new crop that is being used to, they pelletize it and they burn it, and it's a new biomass, and he heard that somewhere in North Carolina it was being grown, it's Chrysanthemis gigantus or whatever, and so he just happened to call us.
Sure.
And we can help him. So we looked it up, and we had a long conversation with him and connected him to some farmers who are engaged in the product in North Carolina. Full-service Chamber of Commerce, but people do call us about the crazy. Sometimes they'll call and they want turn-by-turn directions. Sometimes they call, and their last name is Chapel, and they want to know whether Chapel Hill was named for them. They're the Chapel family. I tell them that's not the case.
I'm beginning to feel like you're really a stand-up comedy here.
The Blue Bonnet Festival, just so you know, is in Chapel Hill, Texas.
Right.
We get lots of calls about the Blue Bonnet Festival as well.
Okay. Well, now listen, I'm going to synthesize that little story you told us about the man calling you from Cleveland. And to me, that's saying that those the integration between agriculture and science and how do we make business work. I can't help but think that you are the patch board. You're the sounding board for many inquiries. And I can understand why people may be confused on the outside looking in, where they would be the first, you might be the first stop to call.
We don't mind that telephone call at all. Our job is to promote this community, to connect people to resources, to help them thrive. And so we are happy to take any telephone call. And sometimes we have to refer that to somebody else who's better at that than we are. But if we can help them, particularly our members, our 1,100 members, they hired us. I have 7 full-time staff, and there's no purpose that we serve other than to help them be successful.
You mentioned it earlier in the show that there has been an overall increase in your membership. Did I hear you correctly?
We're the fastest-growing chamber on the East Coast of the United States.
So you must be doing something right, Aaron.
We have it's a good program. It's a value-based. We are going to deliver value. It isn't a charity. There are charities. We're not one of them. And so people pay us, and we deliver a service.
So that raises a question. Are you a not-for-profit or not?
Yeah, chambers of commerce are a legal form called 501c6. We're a not-for-profit organization. C6 is our chambers professional association. So the National Association of Broadcast Journalists.
Thank you.
That would be a 501c6 also. CPA societies, boards of realtors, bar associations, chambers.
I see. Okay. I'll tell you where this is going. North Carolina is one among the nation who have approved a new form of corporation. That form of corporation is called L3Cs.
I'm very familiar with it.
Oh, well, would you please educate our listeners? Because
sure.
And this today, is a fundamental aspect.
Yeah, so very cool. There's a movement called social enterprise, but we prefer to call it fourth sector.
Okay, now let's slow down a moment.
The economy is traditionally divided into 3 sectors. The private sector, the public sector, and government. So private sector, nonprofits, and government.
Right.
And that's been our traditional model for 150 years. An emerging new sector of our economy is growing, and it's organizations that use a business methodology to solve a public purpose. So several examples. Goodwill is a good example of that. Most folks have that in their community. Think of a church daycare. Mm-hmm. They charge for a service, but they're doing it for a public purpose. And those are growing and growing. And so this is now called the fourth sector of our economy. Again, a business methodology for public purpose. Trosa in Durham, PTA Thrift Shop in Carrboro. There's a bakery up north that's, they don't bake brownies to employ people. I mean, they don't employ people to bake brownies. They bake brownies to employ people. So they have put an entire system together about hiring folks. We have a conference center here in Chapel Hill that uses developmentally disabled adults to run a conference center. Extraordinary Ventures. Rather than just fold pizza boxes, which is some of what we were doing with developmentally delayed or disabled adults before, we now run a conference center with this talented group of folks. There's a company out in California that their theme is Nothing Stops a Bullet Like a Job. And they are a screen printing business that uses former gang members. Again, a business methodology for public purpose. So I teach a class at Carolina on social enterprise.
Oh, I didn't realize, Aaron.
Social work students on how to use business methodology to attack. And there's a group called the North Carolina Fourth Sector Cluster Initiative. And I co-chair that. So the North Carolina Fourth Sector Cluster Group is about how we're going to put together an infrastructure in North Carolina to help these types of enterprise thrive. So quickly, cool things are happening. Today, the state legislature will take up what's called B Corporation.
Yes.
A for-benefit corporation. Again, not-for-profit, not for-profit. It is a for-benefit corporation. And so these organizations will be private sector, tax-paying organizations, but that they say that they have a value other than maximizing shareholder benefit.
Okay. Now, this is where your expertise and myself may have a bit of a chasm. So I'm going to go through and fill in some knowledge gaps, and I expect you to correct me if I'm wrong. He's smiling. He said, I'll do that.
Let's see how we can do.
When you talk about B Corps and you talk about things that companies doing using a business model to support a social enterprise.
Correct.
What we're really talking about is saying we have a social problem. We don't want to create a not-for-profit to fix it. We want to be able to fix this by building a business.
It goes, the two different things are happening. One, okay. Nonprofits are deciding rather than to rely on charity, they want to earn their income. Let's use the Girl Scouts. They don't ask for charity.
Extraordinary idea.
Right. Girl Scouts sell cookies. They don't ask for charity. They sell a product. They use the revenue off that product to fund their thing. The other thing happening on the private sector is let's use the private sector model to solve a problem. So if we have recent prison graduates, I never know what they're called, prison outputs. People, you're done with prison.
Okay.
We can either convince local employers to hire them. Hey, Whole Foods, will you hire this guy? Or we could create an enterprise designed for them that we're going to create a nursery that are going to grow and sell plants, and it's designed to have these five guys or 10 or whatever. We create systems. So you both, it's the trifecta. You solve a social problem, you generate your own income and don't have to rely on government, and you often do it in an environmentally responsible way.
Well, this is what the power behind this notion, and I'm thrilled to know that you sit at University of North Carolina and serve on that cluster. Didn't know that. Because what we've noticed here in North Carolina, in this particular region, is that the talent is equally aware and impassioned, if that's the right word, to solve a problem. And this the social aspect is there's a resistance to saying, wait a minute, you know, this isn't just about performance any longer. This is about meeting all of the needs, the employees' needs, the community's needs, and then spinning a solution around that.
Exactly. And so the governor has appointed an interagency task force on accelerating fourth sector enterprise. So the Secretary of Commerce in North Carolina has convened all of the different departments in government, all the secretaries, and we've done a briefing for them on what this fourth sector is. Then each of those departments are having now sub-briefings so that we can teach their department heads within their division about what this emerging is. And then we need to create the infrastructure, the ecosystem, to support those enterprises because they are a little non-traditional. It's how are they going to capitalize? What's the legal structure? What's the tax treatment around these types of organizations where their DNA, our definition of them is they earn more than 50% of their income is earned rather than donated, and that their mission is to solve a problem.
Now, when you use these definitions, are you referring specifically to B Corps or are you L3Cs or both?
Let's be careful with our language. I'm talking about organizations in the fourth sector.
That embraces all organizations in the fourth sector.
Now, there's some legal things happening. So L3C, we now have a hybrid in North Carolina where you are part nonprofit, part for-profit. So you can have investors that get a limited return, and Z. Smith Reynolds can give you a grant. But you can't receive a charitable gift from you or me. That's fine. So you can solve the public purpose requirement for a granting organization, and you can have an investor who can help capitalize your organization and get a limited return. So say WCOM decides to be a L3C. I could invest $50,000 in this company and get a 5% return over time, and you could get a grant from the town of Carrboro, and you blend those two things together in this new form.
Right. Now, just so the listener can follow, the advantage of this, Aaron, is that you immediately open up a cafeteria to capital, two forms of capital. You're just not a vegetarian. You could be a carnivore
yes.
as well.
Omnivore. We're creating onwards. So, right, nonprofits could only get grants and borrow.
Right.
And for-profits could only raise capital for equity or debt. And now we have a blending so that you can do things differently.
Do you see these as powerful tools in your kit?
I think so. I think that there's an emerging interest in this. Not everybody will convert in this space or be born in this space. But just like LLCs were created however many, 20 years ago, and everybody thought, that's crazy. We S-Corp and C-Corp, that does everything we need. Now LLC, it solves a lot of issues. And so it may be a small percentage of businesses that will play in this space, but it will be a powerful space for them to play in.
When you start looking into the future, I know you're dealing very much with the present and you're kept very busy with those phone calls.
Right.
But when you look into the future, do you feel like you're shaping the future with being able to talk, have conversations, and to teach our communities specifically about these new forms of businesses?
We hope so. So new concepts, you know, how do we infect people with a new idea? What is the process of the tipping point, right? How do you...
Malcolm Gladwell's book, one of three, actually.
Right. So how do we add into the common lexicon, mm-hmm. community conversation, this new... So let me use race as an example. When we made everybody be black or white, mm-hmm. you had to be black or you had to be white, or you could be Asian or you could be... And then we created biracial. And all of a sudden, a whole cadre of people were like, that's exactly who I'm tired of... I don't want to go just to the conference. So this new space of hybrid organizations where you don't have to fit into the boxes that we were forcing you into, that you have attributes of both, and that we're going to create an ecosystem to help you thrive, and we're going to break down the barriers that made you pick one of these two boxes, that is really accelerating and empowering for the folks in that space.
When, as our time is ever precious, and your time, I understand, when you look towards success stories here in the Triangle that's leveraged, have been born into that new space, or even bigger than that, that the growing acceptance of the fourth sector, what are you most excited about?
If you're looking for an example, the best we have is a group called TROSA. So TROSA is a moving company. They moved 5,000 families last year in 365 days. They also had a grocery store. They have a frame shop. They sell Christmas trees. They have lawn care and something else. TROSA is now a $6 million company. But what they really are is a residential facility for substance abusers. TROSA stands for Triangle Residential Associate Substance Abusers. And so 300 employees, all of which are former addicts, all of which would be on parole or in jail or in a treatment facility. But instead of requiring government money in order to run that, he now earns most of that through the sale of products. He runs a moving company. And so everybody who works for TROSA is in a 2-year residential rehab facility.
I think that's the appropriate place to draw a halt to our Courage Cocktail this week. And I want to thank you all for joining me. It's great to be back. We want to thank the Triangle Swim School for supporting Courage Cocktail Radio Show. They are based in the Triangle Aquatic Center in Cary, North Carolina. Please check out their website at www.triangleswimschool.com. Small classes making great strides. As you know, our show is reaching more and more supporters, and many of you have made contributions to WCOM. For this, I and my staff here are very, very grateful. I look forward to joining you next week, and we will be broadcasting many programs via pre-recorded as our program moves from one venue into the next. The most important part that we have in Courage Cocktail, by the way, is your responsiveness and your support. I appreciate all the comments while we were broadcasting out in Cape Cod on Facebook and on email. Please join me at my own website, www.friendlyfearnotebook.com, where you will be able to hear all the recorded podcasts. And I want to thank you. Look forward to joining you next week. This is Leanne McClymont of Courage Cocktail Radio Show. You bring the lunch, and I'll bring the Courage Cocktail.
This is WCOM LPFM Chapel Hill Carrboro 103.5.